Thank you. Okay, so I'd like to start by asking you all to take two deep breaths. Okay? Everybody relaxed? Well, one of those breaths came from the oceans, from small plants called phytoplankton. Now, the phytoplankton are the lungs of the planet. They produce most of our oxygen, and indeed, more than 70% of our oxygen comes from the oceans. Yet it's dropping four times quicker than carbon dioxide is increasing, which I'll come back to later. But we have lost 50% of the phytoplankton. So the lungs of the planet, giving us all our oxygen, removing most of our CO2, yet over the last 50 years, we have lost 50% of all marine phytoplankton. Moreover, from satellite imagery from NASA, the levels of phytoplankton are dropping at a rate of 1% year on year. So it doesn't take a mathematician to work out there's an end point coming. If we lose the phytoplankton, we lose the oceans, and the oceans are responsible for sustaining all life on Earth. Now, you might think that most of our oxygen comes from trees and from grass, and indeed, a lot does. But when we're dealing with a forest such as the Amazon rainforest, mature forests, when the trees are growing, they're absorbing carbon dioxide and producing oxygen. But when they die, bacteria and fungi break down the cell tissue and release exactly the same amount of CO2 back into the atmosphere and consume the same amount of oxygen that the trees produced while they were growing. So in reality, forests such as the Amazon rainforest do not produce oxygen, and they do not remove carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. Indeed, the Amazon rainforest is a net exporter of carbon because of the deforestation and the burning of the trees. The only part of the terrestrial ecosystem that actually removes carbon dioxide are peat bogs, marshlands, wetlands, mangrove swamps that represent only 1% of terrestrial plants. To put this into perspective, the marshlands in Scotland actually absorb more carbon dioxide and produce more oxygen than the Amazon rainforest. So these are incredibly important ecosystems that we have to preserve. We shouldn't be draining marshlands and turning them into farmland. They are too important part of the ecosystem to do that. Now, when we look at the CO2 balance of the planet, the IPCC, it's the International or the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the pie chart on the left is the current status of CO2. And from the burning of fossil fuels, we have 35 gigatons of CO2 going into the atmosphere every year. Now, one gigaton is 1,000 million tons. Huge amount of CO2. The CO2 is removed, or part of it is removed, by reactions with minerals, such as silicates. 5 gigatons is removed by the terrestrial plants, that's the marshlands and peat bogs. And 12 gigatons is removed by phytoplankton growing in the oceans. We're also burning trees and releasing 5 gigatons back into the atmosphere, and this has to stop, because the net effect is that we're putting 17 gigatons of CO2 into the atmosphere every year. And this is the reason why we have climate change. CO2 is a greenhouse gas, and as the gas builds up in the atmosphere, then the planet is warming as a consequence of that. But we have lost 50% of all the plant growth in the oceans. If we had not lost the phytoplankton over the last 50 years, then the oceans would be absorbing between 24 and 30 gigatons of CO2. We wouldn't have climate change. So, perhaps we're all looking in the wrong direction and blaming the burning of fossil fuels for the position that we're in at the moment. we haven't focused and looked at the oceans, the lungs of the planet. And if we'd preserved the oceans and stopped this reduction in phytoplankton, then we would not have climate change. Now, we know very little about what's happening in the oceans. You know, it represents 3/4 of the planet, but we really don't know what's going on there. And by way of example, this blue-green algae, Prochlorococcus, it's the most abundant plant on the planet. It also produces the same biomass as all of human agriculture, but we didn't know about it until 30 years ago. What we do know about is coccolithophores and foraminifera. These are carbonate-based life forms. They are critically important for the production of oxygen and the removal of CO2. So much so that they can build cliffs, the White Cliffs of Dover. They are made from coccolithophores. It's marine plankton, locking out the carbon dioxide and producing our oxygen. But we have many different species of phytoplankton living in the oceans. And Ceratium, it's called a protist. It's like a combination between an algae and an animal. It removes CO2, it produces oxygen, but it also eats small particles, such as microplastics. And I'll come back to microplastics later. But the protists are cellulose-based, and they are responsible for most of our oil and natural gas. We also have silica and strontium-based plankton, highly important for the production of oxygen and removal of CO2, and wonderful architecture as well. Now, moving up the food chain, we'll come to copepods. Copepods represent the greatest mass of animals on the planet. They represent 7 times the weight of all humans. And they're about 100 times stronger, weight for weight, than a human. And every night, the copepods migrate to the surface to feed on the phytoplankton. It is the greatest mass movement of animals on the planet, and it happens twice a day. Now, as the copepods move to the surface, they drag water with them. They move as much water as the moon or the tides. So huge energy transfers are taking place twice a day. But this has not been factored into the climate change model. So the model is flawed. And there's another reason for climate change. It's not just the accumulation of CO2. So marine plants are really important. But why have we lost 50% of them since the 1950s? It's not climate change. This is the usual response of climate scientists, is that the reduction in productivity and the reduction in the plankton is caused by a change in temperature or a change in currents. It's not. A slight increase in temperature, elevated levels of CO2, and also the nutrients coming in from human sources should actually be acting like a fertilizer. We should be seeing a dramatic increase in phytoplankton. And certainly, we see this around the coastline where there are blooms of plankton. And when they die, they use up all the oxygen, and this creates dead zones. But we're not seeing an increase of plankton in the mid-ocean, which is critical. Our explanation is pollution, pollution from human sources. Now, climate change has been laid on as industrial revolution as a cause with the burning of fossil fuels. But really, the ocean ecosystems really started to change, not with the industrial revolution, but with the chemical revolution. Starting in the 1940s and 50s with chemicals such as DDT. These are persistent organic pollutants, highly toxic, and they do not break down in the marine ecosystem. They'll kill phytoplankton and zooplankton, and they'll keep doing that. They do not disappear. They continue to build up within the ecosystem. And we're discharging billions of tons of waste into the environment every year. from industrial sources and domestic and municipal sources, from all different industries, from Alaska to the Caribbean. We're discharging massive amounts of waste into the environment, and it includes plastic and organic debris, into the atmosphere from the cars, from power stations, from petrochemical plants, and aquatic environmental pollution from the textile industry, the pharmaceuticals, petrochemicals. This is a photograph of a river in a textile town in China. Huge levels of pollution going into the environment. And it all ends up in the oceans. Now, with regards to plastic, we've got two rotating gyres in the Pacific. Each one's the size of France. And we have one in the Atlantic and also in the Southern Ocean. And this plastic and this waste is responsible for killing more than 1 million seabirds every year. In actual fact, I think this is an underestimate. I think it's closer to 100 million seabirds every year, and over 100,000 marine mammals, such as dolphins and whales and seals. This is a really unsustainable situation. And if we don't stop the discharge of plastics into the environment, then it's unlikely the whales will survive over the next 10 years. Plastic is important, but it's what you don't see that actually may be even more important and dangerous. Now, I'm using this as one example, and the coral reefs. The coral reefs are really important for the marine environment. They are the breeding ground for 25% of all the fish in the oceans. Yet we have managed to kill 25% of all the coral reefs around the world, and they will not come back. They're dead. 50% of the coral reefs have suffered from coral bleaching. Now, coral is an unusual organism. It's a combination, it's a symbiotic combination between algae and an animal, a polyp. And when you have coral bleaching, it means that the algae component of the coral has died. Now, the algae is absolutely critical as an energy source for the polyp. And without the algae, it becomes very sensitive to any change in its environment, such as temperature. But climate scientists have said, well, coral bleaching is caused by elevated temperatures, up to 28 or 30 degrees centigrade. This is nonsense. At 28 degrees centigrade, corals perform incredibly well, even up to 30 and 31 degrees C. So it's not temperature. But if you lose the algae from the coral, then they do become sensitive to elevated temperatures. And one of the most toxic chemicals to coral is sunscreen. It's a personal care product that we all use. And it's oxybenzone, which is a photoactive chemical present in many sunscreens. And this chemical is so toxic that at levels of 62 parts per trillion will kill coral and prevent it from re-establishing itself. And the levels of oxybenzone currently in the Caribbean preclude any settlement and development of coral. So we've effectively killed all the coral in the Caribbean unless we can deal with this issue. Now, one bottle of sunscreen containing oxybenzone is enough to wipe out all marine life in 1 square kilometre. And I checked on Alibaba that you can actually buy a kilogram of oxybenzone for 1 euro. And 1 kilogram of oxybenzone is sufficient to wipe out all marine life in 200 square kilometres, about the same size of the area shown covering Edinburgh. Why are we allowing this chemical to be used in personal care products? And it's not just sunscreen, it's in 3,500 personal care products. So one of my missions today is to make you aware of what we are doing. It's not industry in China or industrial pollution. Most of the pollution that's impacting on the coral reefs is from using personal care products. Highly toxic. So I recommend that you go home and you read the labels on your cosmetics, and if it contains oxybenzone, then I would suggest you return it back to the shop from which you bought it or return it to the manufacturer. It is too toxic a chemical to have in our environment. And there are many more. You know, Europe manufactures 200,000 tons of priority chemicals every year. Priority chemicals are chemicals deemed to be too toxic to have in the environment. And if we take one of them, tributyl tin, TBT, the world manufactures 30,000 tons a year of this chemical, but 1,000 tons is sufficient to wipe out all marine life. And TBT is present as a plasticizer in plastic. And indeed, oxybenzone sunscreen is also present in plastic. So not only is the plastic dangerous, you know, to the marine life, it's also extremely toxic to marine life. And this is not a sustainable situation. We can go to the remotest part on the planet, into the Mariana Trench. The Mariana Trench is 11 kilometers deep, deeper than Mount Everest is high. And a survey conducted by Newcastle University 2 years ago sent a robot into the trench and they collected samples of the sediment. And they found that the levels of PCBs, polychlorinated biphenyls, and fire retardants, PBDE, is 50 times more toxic than the most toxic rivers in China. PCBs were actually banned in the 1970s, but they're still used in certain electronic components. And America exports 100,000 tons of consumer electronics, sold telephones and computers, to India. And they then dismantle these components, and the PCBs go back into the environment. PCBs do not disappear. They build up through a process of chain amplification. You put the PCBs into the water, they're absorbed by bacteria, algae, zooplankton, fish, and eventually they come back. So the levels of PCB, for example, in the North Sea, preclude eating more than 2 fish every week. Otherwise, you're going to suffer from PCB poisoning. And PBDE is almost as dangerous as PCBs. And PBDE is a fire retardant. It's used in textiles, it's used in furniture, it's used in carpets. We should not be using these chemicals. Because every living organism in the oceans, from the smallest bacterium to the whales, contains priority chemicals. 1 in 15 organisms in the oceans contains microplastic. Now, microplastic tends to act like a sponge. And many of the chemicals which are really toxic are hydrophobic, and they will be absorbed onto the surface of microplastics. So when a zooplankton eats a small piece of plastic, they're not just eating the plastic, they're eating the chemicals which have been absorbed by that plastic. And these chemicals can be amplified 1,000 or even 1,000,000 times. This is why plastic is so dangerous. This is why we also must stop the discharge of priority chemicals and toxic cosmetics back into the environment. And this could be the reason why we're losing 1% of the phytoplankton year on year. Now, also from the IPCC, they've been monitoring the pH conditions. So when you're burning fossil fuels, carbon dioxide goes into the atmosphere, the CO2 then dissolves into the water, into the oceans, and CO2 forms carbonic acid. And the pH drops. So if you go back to before the 1940s, the pH was about 8.15, 8.2. And as a result of CO2 dissolution into the water and the formation of carbonic acid, the pH has dropped to 8.06. This is the current oceanic pH. And if we've lost 50% of the phytoplankton and are dropping at a rate of 1% year on year, then we're losing the mechanism to remove that carbon dioxide from the water. So the pH accelerates in a downward trend. And if we project forward 25 years, oceanic pH will have dropped to 7.9 to 7.95. Now, one of the other areas in which we work is with the life support systems for many of the world's aquaria. We're also involved in developing water treatment systems for the fish farming industry. And we know for sure that you cannot maintain a public aquarium at a pH of 7.9. Because any life forms based on carbonate simply dissolve, and that applies to most of the eggs of the fish as well. So, if we allow the oceans to become acidic and for the pH to drop to 7.9, then what we're looking at is a cascade destabilization of the entire marine ecosystem, and this is going to happen in 25 years. And if we allow that to happen, then we're going to lose all the whales, all the seals, all the birds, the polar bears, and most of the fish. And with that, the food supply for more than 1 billion people. Now, I appreciate this sounds absolutely ridiculous. You know, how could this possibly be happening? The reality is that it is happening. But there is also hope, because with the awareness of what we're doing to the marine ecosystem, with awareness that chemicals such as oxybenzone that we all, I'm sure, have used in sunscreen and shaving foam and shampoo, it's even in clothes washing powder. You know, whenever you see its color fixed, then it's because it contains oxybenzone. But if we eliminate priority chemical pollution, it will give a chance for the marine ecosystem to recover. And this could happen really very quick, because trees, they take 100 or 200 years to grow. But a coccolithophore takes only a few hours or a few days. So if we remove the brakes on the system, then these organisms can recover. And bacteria or cyanobacteria, they only take a few minutes to a few hours to grow. So if we remove the toxic brakes on the marine ecosystem, then it can recover, and it can recover really quickly. If we don't do that, then the same thing will happen in reverse. And once the cascade reaction initiates, then it might only take 2 or 3 years for the ecosystem to collapse. And if we lose the marine ecosystem, then the terrestrial ecosystem will follow suit, because we cannot survive without the lungs of the planet, which are the plankton that live in the oceans. But we need to take action now. We need to eliminate priority chemical pollution within the next 10 years, because the inertia that is built up in the system means that we have to give the oceans time to recover. Because if we don't, then they will collapse within the next 25 years. Now, as part of the GOES Foundation, we're also about working in citizen science and collecting as much information as possible. So we're engaging with up to 5,000 yachtsmen who are going across the Southern Oceans and the Pacific and collecting plankton samples, really so we can build the body of evidence. And we'll take these plankton samples, and they're being analysed by Edinburgh University. Now, there already is a huge amount of information out there, but we wish to reinforce on that that database of knowledge, and to make people acutely aware of what we are doing to our environment. Because with knowledge and information, we can affect change. And it happens with every one of us here. Because it's down to change of behavior and the buying habits. For example, with household products, do not buy carpets containing fire retardant with PBDE, or furniture, you know, with PBDE. We have to stop using this chemical. And with regards to personal care products, well, oxybenzone is one. There are many which are almost equally as bad. Pharmaceuticals. Pharmaceuticals cause huge damage to both freshwater and to the marine ecosystem, because every time you consume pharmaceuticals, 95% of it goes down the toilet. And it goes in through the water treatment systems and back into the environment. Every time you have a drink of water, you are being medicated with pharmaceuticals. 80% of the water supplies in Europe contain microplastics. So the combination of priority chemicals, pharmaceuticals, and microplastics, these are really toxic chemicals, and we should not be allowing them, not in our own bodies and not in the ocean. Now, you might say, well, we have effluent treatment, municipal wastewater treatment. But only 10% of water treatment systems around Europe have tertiary treatment systems on the back end to remove the solids. If we removed the solids, then we'd remove many of these priority chemicals with the solids. Now, in the case of the UK, if we were to install tertiary treatment in every municipal treatment plant, the cost would be about 25 billion euros. Huge sum of money, but tiny in comparison to the impact we're going to have on the ecosystem and to the economy if we don't do it. And certainly industry has to be zero waste and zero discharge. And if we affect all these changes and demand a non-toxic environment, and if we all live responsible, sustainable lives, then I think together we can actually restore the earth. Thank you.